Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to This Anthro Life. I'm your host, Adam Gamwell. If you're new to the podcast, welcome, welcome, welcome. And if you're returning, it's an honor to once again climb into your brain by way of your ears. One question I often think about is, what do I know as a working professional anthropologist that I wish I had known back when I was getting started? Or what advice would I give myself while studying anthropology? The truth is, most of us struggle with defining what we want to do for a career and matching those desires with our existing work experience and skill set, or what skills and experience we need to acquire in order to land or make our dream job. Many of us may not even know what job options are available to us or where to look. And while career search advice can often be invaluable, sometimes we just need to take one step back and think about or reassess a career plan. The truth is, the world is changing so quickly that we need professional development just as much as we need subject matter expertise. And today's episode is all about this. Like many career stories, this one is framed by our schooling. Tell me if you've heard this one before. Oftentimes, professional development is seen as something not as important as coursework or as gaining an expertise in a subject area. This has the effect of professors and universities devaluing professional development and also seeing it as something that's really only for career service offices. But the flip side is that students themselves don't think much about professional development and find themselves unsure about their skill set, their resume, or even how to think about the kind of work that they want to do. So career coach Amy Santee and myself worked with Professor John Anjaria of Brandeis University to run a session on designing one's career plan. I'm excited to share some of these highlights from this session in today's episode. So as we head into the main content, know that this is relevant for anyone, whether you're a student and looking for your first job or whether you're a mid-career professor or industry insider and are just curious about what else is out there and how to think about it. We're going to dig into defining your values as a starting point, mapping a vision for your future by looking at your past, how to take action on your plan, and learning to trust your intuition as much as the data that you gather. Very much hope you enjoy, and we'll see you on the other side. Oftentimes, I certainly didn't think about this when I started graduate school, but it's become fundamental in how I have put my professional self together in the past few years. And I know Amy's been working on this for a number of years as well. So we're super excited about this. But Amy, you want to kick us off and tell us?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I'm Amy Santee. I use she, her pronouns. I have a master's degree from University of Memphis, which I got in 2011. And that's an applied anthropology program. So a bit different from traditional, more academic-oriented anthropology and other disciplines. Most recently, I was a design research user experience consultant working in technology, primarily on digital products and services. And maybe some of you are familiar with that field, but it's essentially about incorporating the perspective of people who use products and services, systems, programs, whatever it might be, into the product development and design process to make sure that it reflects their lives and their goals and their challenges and all of that, while at the same time attempting and hopefully succeeding at meeting business goals for the business. And so I have worked in large companies, startup context, design consulting agencies, and then most recently on my own for the past couple years as a consultant with my own clients. So that's generally speaking what I do. And like I said, I got my master's in applied anthropology. And at that point, I didn't even know what user experience or product development was, but I did get my first role in research, consumer research at State Farm Insurance, and then found myself in this world. So my master's program definitely prepared me in the sense of understanding more about the application of anthropology perspectives and methods to problem solving. But that said, like Adam mentioned, I did have a lot of work to do myself in terms of making that transition and dealing with the culture shock and fitting into the working world outside of school. And yeah, I love talking about this topic. I've been blogging about it for 10 years. And now I've transitioned into career coaching. That's just been a passion of mine, mentoring people and helping them figure out what they want to do and work on their resume and all of that stuff. Yeah, Adam, if you want to go.
Right on, cool. Thanks. That's great. And this is why Amy and I are excited to do this together, because we both have similar but different experiences that complement one another. So as John mentioned too, I did my PhD at Brandeis in anthropology. And as you may know, the master's and PhD at Brandeis are not particularly applied. They're more of a traditional academic approach, but obviously seminars and workshops like this are helping us think and do new directions. And so part of my own path at Brandeis, as John and Elizabeth Ferry, my advisors, would know, is that I was leaning myself and moving into more applied and design work, particularly when I was doing my ethnographic field work. I was working in southern Peru on quinoa conservation. And I was interested in what would that look like as applied kind of work. I was more interested in not necessarily just doing an old school kind of ethnography, but I wanted to actually help people make a difference with the work I was doing. And so for me, that ended up working with an NGO. And I was struggling at the time to figure out what it meant to do what I now call interventionist work, which is help designing solutions, in this case, around conservation. And I found this field of design anthropology as a framework and a way of doing anthropology that was designing alongside and for and with people to help them solve problems. It's almost a straightforward definition. And that really inspired the path going forward and figuring out what it is that I wanted to do and what kind of anthropologist I wanted to be going out in the world. And part of my path then, when I came back from fieldwork in 2016, I was over the next 2 years was doing some dissertation write-up as well as working. And I ended up teaching in design programs. So I taught as a design anthropologist. And this was an important part of my own development, because I found I can offer some of the most value by working in hybrid spaces, where I wasn't just an anthropologist teaching anthropology, but I was an anthropologist teaching design. And that helped by bringing a new perspective to the design program, as well as then helped me learn to think more like a designer. And the other side of it too is that as I finished and I was teaching, I really became enamored and interested in doing work in industry versus teaching. I still love teaching and I will always do educational work as long as I can as part of my work. But to be direct and honest about this as part of this work here, like, there was not an easy path to viable jobs as a teacher, as a professor, and I also didn't want to go through that slog. The flip side of that is that I also really wanted industry experience and was quite drawn to this kind of work. And I wanted to make what I would consider a realistic and comfortable living. And that's not to poke fun at teaching, but it's a bit of a reality on how long the path is from getting your degree if you want to go into teaching and what that path is like. And so we'll talk a bit about that as we go forward. But all this to say, this is how a career plan for me began to develop. Similar to Amy, is that I ended up bouncing around a lot of different places, and that I started working for myself. I mean, I founded a small little company called Missing Link Studios, where I would do client-facing kind of design research projects similar to what Amy has done. And then opposite of her, I now work full-time at a company called MotiveBase as an anthropologist and a researcher. And so we have both kind of bounced around between working for ourselves, working for other companies, and doing research. And so we were circling around the experience that both of us have. And I guess I should just add at this point, we'll talk about it later too, but similar to Amy's blog, I've been doing a podcast called This Anthro Life for a little over 7 years. And that's been my kind of way of practicing and playing with my voice and what it means to put other kinds of anthropological thinking out into the world. But so just to jump a bit into why are we talking about a career plan? What does it mean to think about a job search, right? How do you think about looking for work, getting your networking happening on social media and things like that? And that is a huge and fundamental important part of obviously looking for work. But what Amy and I wanted to share with you all today is that a career plan is different from a job search. They work really well together. But what we would say is setting up a career plan for yourself is a fundamental step that can come before trying to figure out career search. And this is in part because you may not even have any idea of what kind of work you want to do or what options are even available or what might even be out there. What does it mean to think about looking for a job title or a job, you know, description is asking for certain kinds of skills you're not sure if you have or not? All these things may feel quite foreign and weird. So trying to get yourself a job plan may feel a bit overwhelming. And we want to empathize with that, because that's how I felt when I started thinking about this stuff too. But a career plan swoops in and gives you a base with which to build out what then your next steps could be something like a career or a job search.
Yeah. And part of it too is it's like creating a strategy. So how to get from A to B. Rather than just doing things as they come up, you're thinking ahead and being proactive so that once you progress through each stage of, you know, I'm in school, then I get my degree and I'm looking for a job or whatever it is you're doing, you have thought about and prepared yourself for the different situations that will come up for interviews. You're going to be ready with all of your career assets, your LinkedIn, your resume to jump into that stuff. You will have thought and reflected a lot about what it is you like to do, what you're interested in, explored options, experimented with different hypotheses. You will have done some networking, and not in the sense of like approaching random people awkwardly, but building your network, building your community outside of and within academia. And then two other things is just jumping in and trying stuff out. And all of this put together really does build your confidence over time that you will be able to progress with success in your career.
Yeah. And part of this too that we want to emphasize is that the earlier you can internalize the idea of a career plan, the better. And so to John's point, when we kind of open this up, sometimes we don't think about what work will I do? What job might I get? What career do I want? Till we're at the end of graduate school. And obviously, if you're doing a master's, that can be shorter. It can be 1 year, 2 years. PhD can be a longer road. However, what we really want to encourage you to do is internalize these ideas as soon as you can. Think about these in terms of helping frame your work. The important piece about this too is we're not here to change your mind if you want to be a professor or if you want to go into industry. Like, you can do either of these. The idea is a career plan will help you do any of this better. It'll help you be a better researcher, help you be a better professor, help you be a better industry practitioner. The idea with this is really just about trying to get a sense of what is a broader perspective of the kinds of work and the kinds of values and the kinds of thinking processes that are needed to understand the kind of work that you want to do. So this applies across all things. And part of the reason we're going to say this and point this out is because both Amy and I, we are anthropologists, but again, it doesn't matter what degree or what field you're in, but we both still have a sense of feeling icky about things sometimes. And there's a reason that this seminar is called Why Making a Career Plan Does Not Mean Selling Out. And that's because there is this idea embedded in a lot of academia that if you go into industry, you're going to work for big, bad capitalism. You're just helping the fat cats make money and you're not doing anything useful for the world. And we want to, one, put that myth to rest, but then also point out that, like all things, it's actually a bit more nuanced than we think it is. And Amy and I want to talk about that. There are things that we may feel a little bit icky about, but this is why it's super important to think about what your mindset is going into the kind of careers and work that you want to do. And there are strategies for working around things that you may not be into or you may not like, not throwing out the baby with the bathwater, as it were.
And even though that's part of it, we're not going to focus the entire time on this whole, I don't know, taboo. We'll address it where it comes up, but we really also want to focus largely on this idea of creating a strategy and where that stuff might come up in terms of feeling weird about capitalism and not working in academia and all of that stuff. But we wanted to broaden it to something a bit larger.
One of the first things we can think about with what a career plan is, again, is around this idea of having a mind shift or mindset shift.
That's all.
A mind shift also could also be important. That might be how we feel after this. So a chunk of this is about learning to ask different kinds of questions. And if you are all in graduate school, you've certainly started to ask yourself some of these questions. If you think about why have I gone into graduate school? What am I feeling passionate about? What do I want to dig into a certain subject or a field, right? What do I really feel drawn to it? And so some of these same kinds of lines of thinking are what you can use when you're putting together a career plan, right? Some of these questions include things like asking yourself, what are your values? Do you care about authenticity? Do you care about integrity or justice or transparency in the work that you do? And one of the main things that's important to think about this is these can inform any kind of career strategy that you have. So we want to encourage folks to take some time to pause and think about what are the values that inform the kind of work you do. Like, again, what are you looking for in graduate school as a student, as a potential academic, as a potential person working in industry? It doesn't matter the direction that you're going in, but what kind of values frame the work that you're doing?
I also want to add too, it's okay to have a value of, I want to live a comfortable lifestyle. I would like to make a good amount of money. That's a totally fair value. It's okay to do that. And we have to do that. I think coming from humanities and social sciences, we tend to have these kind of values oriented in an equitable society and how we ideally want society to be. And that's great. And we can try to meet those as much as possible. But try to get out of that and look at your life and go, what do I care about personally that will give me a fulfillment beyond those sorts of values? A couple other things to think about is what kind of impact that you want to have and how do you define impact? So this is something I struggled with personally over my career, even up until recently. I always thought, oh, I want to go out and change the world. And yeah, that would be great. But that's, most people can't do that by themselves. It's about being part of groups and organizations and efforts. But what I've realized in my career is that there's different ways of looking at and defining impact. So maybe you work on some kind of product that people use out in the world, some kind of app, for example, or website, how people buy insurance, car insurance, for example. And yeah, there's business goals in terms of wanting to have an impact on the business, but let's make it easier and more transparent for people to be able to pick a policy that best reflects what they need without upselling them in dark pattern type ways or confusing them. Or health insurance, I think, is an even better example of that. A lot of people have to do that. It can be very confusing. How can we have an impact so that the user experience of that product is better for the people who are using it? Another example of impact is, how can I impact my team, my team's way of thinking about stuff? If I'm a researcher and I'm working on a team building something, how can I get them to care more about the people who use the product? How can I get them to think more critically, think about the ramifications of decisions about how algorithms are built, that sort of thing? Or even more largely organizational culture. So how can you be inside of an organization that you may not like in certain ways, but how can you have an impact on the experience of your coworkers? Maybe you try to organize your coworkers inside of a company. And that is something I'm actually working on right now, a tech worker bill of rights, even though I'm self-employed. So there are efforts out there like this that you can be involved in. So impact doesn't have to be this like big thing. I want to help get rid of capitalism. It could be small things. And then lastly, impact in terms of how it accumulates over time. So in your 30, 40 year career, whatever it may be, you're going to have all these little impacts that if you think about them, they add up to this really big total change that you've made in society and other people's lives.
Yeah, that's a great point too. And I think that impact is such an important way to think about what it is that you want your work to do in the world, right? And so this is a question that's also become fundamental to how I approach what I'm thinking about in my work as well. And even the idea of the podcast I'm doing with this AnthroLife as a public-facing entity is now fundamentally premised on the question of what is the impact of anthropology in the world? And again, you can pick your subject if you're doing something else, but how does this help us solve problems? You know, one of the other questions is this notion of what's the application of my knowledge and skills in the world? And so to Amy's point, one thing that's really struck me and one of the main differences that we'll tag into briefly about the difference of academia versus working in practice is that in general, some of that impact and some of the ways that your application of your knowledge and skills as a researcher, whatever it is, you're going to be working in teams a lot more if you work in industry, or even if you're self-employed, you end up working on teams. And so that's an important idea to realize too, again, who and how you're going to work together with other people. One of the other main differences that I had learned to like from going through PhD in academia is that in general, when you're thinking about what is the difference between working in academia versus practice, is academia, it's again focused on educating and critical thinking and building disciplines, right? And the institution is there to prop up you and your research to highlight your accomplishments. And this is why we get grants and why we write awesome articles and books, and the university helps us put those out there and we teach them in classes. The flip side, if you're working in industry or in practice, we might say, again, industry is not the best catch-all word, but think about this includes nonprofits, government work, organizations, self-employed, consulting, whatever it is. Like you can fit all these kind of things into just the idea of practice, we'd say. When you think about working in practice, it's much more about collaborative problem solving in that you're going to be contributing your expertise and skills to the company or an organization. So it's going to be a little bit less about you and more about how you're helping bring an impact, usually through a team to make something, to solve a problem, to ship a product, whatever it is. So this is just one fundamental difference to think about. If you yourself feel isolated or you love working by yourself, depending, think about that as a value. You can think about what path might make sense for you. If you love the idea of working on teams or you do work on teams already and you find that more valuable and viable, then you might think about what's the kind of working path that would let me then work with others more or more on a team. Again, neither is better, but it's just to realize that there is going to be somewhat of a different path when you're thinking about what it is that I want to do, what kind of work do I want to do.
Yeah. So on that note, related is this idea of myths and misinformation from professors. even gaslighting to an extent, which I have heard a lot about from people who contact me and tell me that they are ostracized for wanting to not work in academia. And that's really unfortunate. Unintentional bullying, essentially, maybe students who are the best student and the focus goes on that person. Some of you may have experienced that. And it's important to be aware of that and to take a step back and go, oh, this messaging I'm getting is not helpful. And it's also not true, right? You're not a sellout if you leave academia. And most of us have to do that. That's just the nature of academia. There's like one new job a year, basically. In school, we learn to emulate our professors. And I think that's part of it. I think that's why our identities, our academic identities become so strong. And when we have to switch that up, it's a big challenge. And that said, it's not always intentional. Professors don't know what they don't know. They haven't worked outside of academia, so they're not familiar with it necessarily, although it's a good idea if they try to do that. And then thinking systemically about institutions in academia, this is not something that's necessarily rewarded, right? You're rewarded for creating knowledge, educating students, meeting metrics of PhD graduates, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of stuff to keep in mind, but I think it's healthy to take a step back and go, hey, maybe some of what I'm hearing isn't so helpful or may not be true.
Yeah, that's actually something that we've learned to both think about is that really the main point here is to be a critical thinker about the kind of work that you want to do and the kind of environments that you find yourself in. And when we say that, we don't just mean think critically about capitalism or industry. Think critically about academia too. And treat that also as you would. Add your critical lens that we are all trained to have as graduate students and apply that to how you're thinking about your career process and where you want to work. Are the environments that you're in healthy? Are they exciting to you? Do you feel like they're giving you life? So it's really just about not saying one is better than the other, right? Or that you even have to pick one. Hopefully we all have long lives. Like, we are going to have options of changing and doing different kinds of work throughout our lives. One of the most exciting parts actually of my own journey is it's been actually really cool to do a hardcore PhD work and really fun long-term ethnographic field work, to work in media production and podcasting, to get to teach in design and engineering programs, teach in anthropology classes, to work for myself, to work for a company. Like, this has been really cool for the past 5 years. And so, again, we're doing this because we're really excited. We want to hammer home, be critical thinkers, but do it across everything. Don't just think about it like, oh, I need to be critical about if I work outside of academia. Be critical about working inside of academia too. It is worth it. And the flip side of our title of not selling out is actually don't sell yourself short by just thinking of one path. Like, it's almost as simple as that. If we can say, just be critical about the entire process. Think critically about all of it, because there's so much cool stuff. And honestly, the world needs us graduate students out there doing good things in the world too. We also need great professors, and we got some here. So the good thing is we need it all. And so we want to be encouraging in that regard. So let's jump over to point two, which is the idea about creating a vision, you know, for the future by mapping where you've come from. And the idea about this is, let's just get a sense of where it is that you're coming from and what it is that you've done, so you can have a better idea of what kind of future envision you want to have for yourself.
Yeah, and I can speak to this as someone who has done this in my own career. I had a coach in 2014 and 15 who enlightened me to this just method of like actually creating a timeline and understanding what my journey was and why I am interested in what I'm interested in and what my skills are, my strengths. And understanding your story is what helps you communicate it better to other people, which is really important when you go look for jobs. We talk about it in one way, in an academic way, but then we have to switch into this storytelling that translates that into something that other people understand. Why did you get into the discipline of Jewish studies? Why did you go into sociology or writing or English? What brought you there? What makes you so passionate about it? What have you done in school and outside of school? Your experience, your projects, what you've learned and how. Even your life stories, because those always correspond. It's not professional and personal is separate. It's all intertwined, as you know. What makes all of this relevant and applicable to a career and to specific jobs that you might be interested in? Again, looking at your skills and strengths, doing an audit. Okay, I'm good at writing, public speaking, research, critical thinking, collaboration, and specific examples of that, because you'll want to be able to talk to those in interviews. What you like to do and what you don't like to do. What differentiates you from other people? What's compelling about you and the value you bring to a job? And if you want to think of this exercise or method in the sense of doing research on yourself, you're collecting data, you're analyzing it for themes and patterns, and then you're distilling it into insights about yourself. So again, the more you understand this, the better able you will be to communicate it to other people.
Yeah. And so it's almost like doing therapy on yourself. It's just, can you talk through what your own story and your own path is? And this is actually something that's quite fun. And what's interesting about doing this practice, the truth is it actually works. It really does make a difference if you take the time to practice both your own story and learning how to articulate it. The funny thing is, if you've applied for a grant also, you have done some of this work anyway. Like, you just may think about it a little bit differently, but you've learned to answer these kinds of questions. If you've ever been interviewed on a podcast or radio, you've also answered these questions before. If you've ever been to therapy, you've probably answered these questions also. So again, realizing that this is not just out of nowhere, but this is actually the common way of understanding oneself that we can draw from a bunch of different fields that is super helpful for both defining your path of where you've been and what you could do. I just want to tag on the idea of skills audit. I didn't have a lot of job experience when I was coming out of school. I had a good record of teaching, but as I was applying for work, I didn't really understand, okay, how do I don't have 2 years of experience at X company or something like that, right? And so part of this is, again, thinking about there is incredible value in the things that you're learning and the way that you're learning in graduate school. And this is just about learning to communicate it in a slightly different way by thinking about the skills that you have from the things that you're already doing. Talking at a conference, great. Public speaking skills, right? Have you written a paper? Great. You've done research management, right? Thinking about the kind of work that you've done this way makes you realize that you actually have done a lot more. You have a lot more experience than you might think you do when if you just looked blankly at a job description and said, well, I have 3 years of experience at this thing. Actually, you might have something that's quite comparable, if not more than that kind of experience. This is really just about understanding your story and what you already bring to the table and thinking about it in a slightly different way. Because then when you have that, you can much more clearly articulate where you want to go.
Yep. So point three?
Yeah, point three.
Okay, point three out of four. So our next point is about taking action. And once you've done all of this foundational work, exploring and synthesizing and coming up with insights about yourself and what you want to do, what you're all about, that's what's going to enable you to start actually taking action, moving forward, testing things out, testing hypotheses about what you might be interested in. You're learning through doing, which really is the best way to learn. Lectures are one thing and taking in information and reading, that's great. But learning through doing is really essential for your professional life. And another way to think about it is you're exploring future selves, future possible selves. And this is all in you to make this happen. And so again, you have this foundational work and the next thing you want to do is take actions. And there's a lot of different ways or things that you can do. Exploring areas of interest, potential career options, taking a look at websites, companies, projects, people on LinkedIn to see what they're doing. Determining what you want to explore further after you test the water and see like, oh, I feel like I'm interested in doing nonprofit work. And then you learn about it. Maybe you talk to some people and it sounds really compelling. So you want to move forward. But then you talk to some folks about working inside of, you know, a tech company and you decide, oh, this doesn't sound like it's for me. So you're doing a lot of learning through taking this action. Testing hypotheses. That's something that we've mentioned a number of times. So a very simple hypothesis can be, I think I'm interested in user experience research. And so you are going to collect that data and be able to test it out and determine if your hypothesis is valid or if you find that you are challenging that question that you have. Other ways of doing this are taking classes, right? Not academic classes per se, but professional oriented classes about areas of interest, informational interviews, podcasts like Adam's podcast. He has talked with so many different anthropologists working in all these different fields. And I was on there as well talking about design research. So that's a great resource. And I think too, again, this is not something that you want to do like post graduation. You want to start doing it as early as possible. So for example, thinking about my time at University of Memphis, I was able to do some internships and we called it a practicum project, but internships at different community organizations to just start practicing the craft of being an anthropologist. A practicing anthropologist, practicing research and making recommendations for research. You go study something and it's not like, here's what I saw. What does that actually mean? How can it help solve a problem or answer a question or help someone make a decision inside of an organization about how to best serve a community? If you can do that sort of stuff in school, that's awesome. If that's not provided to you directly, then make it happen. Go, hey, I'm taking this class, or hey, professor, I want to supplement my degree with this project, and here's why it's relevant to this or to what I'm doing, to what I'm learning. And there's a term in product development and design specifically called iterative design process. And so essentially you're iterating over and over on your path, essentially. So you're getting clarity on how to move forward. You're identifying what you're interested in. You're filling gaps and you're narrowing the scope so that you're not just like throwing yourself out there into every single thing. You're narrowing the scope and you're refining your approach as you go forward.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that one thing I would add to this too is that if you're looking for this kind of getting out there and testing and seeing what you might like or might be interested in, is actually incumbent on you to demand this as part of your department and part of your education. And so what this means is that not everybody's going to know what you want to do. So it's up to you to tell people what you want to do and who you want to be, in essence, and what kind of work you want to do. And then to demand to have these kinds of practice-oriented classes, webinars, workshops, whatever, as part of your program. So you need to let your leaders, your departmental heads and folks in the department know the kind of things and kind of education that you want to get. Now, obviously, I understand part of this is like, oh, I may have never thought about this before. However, the cool thing is it's happening all around us too. For example, just this semester, we did a really awesome internship, class credit trade, where it's practice-based work, working in podcasting, and they are getting class credit for it. And it's, to me, the perfect kind of mix of getting a practice-oriented anthropology, social science thinking. Part of it, again, is like thinking about what it is that you want to do and then putting the call out for it. And yeah, same thing about this idea of testing and refining. It's worth doing it. Like just hypothesize, I think I'd like to do nonprofit work, and then start reading about nonprofit organizations. Maybe if you can do informational interviews where you talk with somebody that works in a nonprofit, get their sense of what it's like to be there. And then you might be like, you know, I actually don't think that sounds fun. That sounds like a lot of work or a lot of weird work I don't want to do. It's just about getting a sense of what kind of work actually even happens in certain places. Now, again, I'm not a full-time professor, but I think all the professors can tell us they don't spend all their time teaching. They probably spend this much of their time teaching, as you all know. There's a lot of administrative stuff that comes with being a professor. And you should think about that too. If you're thinking about, I want to go be a professor, what about being a professor do you want to do? What's actually part of the work process that we have to do? Sometimes, and when it comes to classwork, you got to drag your classwork with you, right? The internship that we did this semester with this Anthro Life and Recall This Book podcasts was easy to bring them together. You could do classwork, you get credit for working with podcasting. Sometimes you just got to drag your classwork with it. Because Amy was saying, if you're doing a class in a certain subject, you want to go research something, or you see a connection somewhere, oh, this organization is doing this really great work on social justice, then find a way to work with them for that class. Write your paper about working with that organization, the institution. Most organizations will let you do something with them.
And the last thing about taking action is don't try to make every decision based on data and insight. Yeah, that's a good way to make decisions, but it only goes so far. The other part of that is to use your intuition. And your intuition is based on your experiences, your life experiences, how you've made decisions in the past, how confident you feel. And intuition is just being able to make a decision without having to explain why, or not even necessarily having a clear explanation. You know what, this feels right to me. So keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, totally. So again, the more you spend time with things, the more they feel familiar and comfortable. And then you just get a sense of why it works. Does it feel right to you? Honor how you feel about something.
Yeah, real quick, just putting yourself out there, and this is really part of taking action, to be honest. It's finding your community. You have your academic community, and that's wonderful. But again, build your network outside of that. Connect with people online, through conferences. There are Slack communities devoted to very specific topics. LinkedIn is a great place. Blogs, lists, email listservs. So expanding outside of your academic community and finding people who do what you do or what you want to do. The other thing too is to just try your voice and make stuff and put yourself out there. I've had this blog, Anthropologizing, for 10 years. It's going to be 10 years next year. And I started it in 2011, I think, as I was getting ready to graduate. So I hadn't graduated yet, but I just started talking about like my struggles with finding a job, and there's no jobs, and I applied to 50 jobs, and here's what I've learned. And it's become an archive or essentially documentation of my career over time. Things that I've learned, what it's like to do research, reflections on organizational culture, and then some other, you know, random interesting stuff on there. But I put myself out there. I just started doing it. And it's really served me in terms of reflecting, but it's also served the larger community, and lots of people find it really helpful. That's a kind of specific example. But, you know, let's say you want to go into nonprofit work, or you want to go into user experience research. You don't need to have that job before you start talking about it. So as you're learning about things, share about it on LinkedIn and build this community, contribute. And that is what organically builds your network on that particular platform or in any other arenas where you're sharing information. And really what it takes is the confidence to jump in. And there's definitely imposter syndrome involved. I had that for a long time. I finally got rid of it like 5 years into my career. And I'm not saying it's going to take you 5 years. It took me 5 years to really just be able to fully manage the imposter syndrome and then just make it go away. So building that confidence to jump in, and it's experimenting. Let's see how it feels to put your ideas out there, to jump on Adam's podcast and talk about your work and see how that goes. And then it's just going to give you additional confidence to move forward. And ultimately, it's a long game. It's part of your strategy, and you're building a reputation. You're building a professional brand. You're building relationships for the long game, for the future. And that will just set you up for opportunities that you never even thought you would come across.
Yeah. I'll just end by saying I actually met Amy because of her blog. So it works.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to Amy Santee and my talk and workshop. We hope that you enjoyed it. And I'm curious how your career plan is going, or what you're thinking of, whether you're a student or a professor or an industry insider or a practitioner. You know, what are some of the elements that may have struck you from this conversation, or is there something else that we missed or that you would like to hear more about or think more about with us? How do you think about the idea of plans or working with your values or thinking of ways to action on it in terms of building hypotheses and taking a couple steps by doing some research? I'd love to get in conversation and see what's working for you. Always interested in collecting and developing new resources around career development and professional upskilling. So let me know, what do you wish that you had known when you were just starting out? Or what do you know now that you wish you had known when you're starting out? Or what advice would you give to your former self? Or if you are just starting out, what do you want to know more about? You know, what's working for you? Where you're confused? What seems most difficult to surmount or to overcome? Hit me up on Twitter at @thisanthrolife, or shoot me a message at thisanthrolife@gmail. I always love hearing from you and getting a conversation. So the dialogue and the door is open as always. And it's a pleasure to be back here with you. I'm excited to move into fall here in the Northern Hemisphere, or moving into springtime if you're in the Southern. So wherever you are, I wish that you will be safe, be happy, and live with ease. I'm your host and companion on that road called Anthro Life, and you've been listening to This Anthro Life. We'll see you next time.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.